Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 Wednesday afternoon, April 2nd. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. In an extremely competitive job market, it's important to make the most of your interviews. We'll discuss ways to do that in our next segment. But right now, President Trump is set to unveil sweeping new tariffs today. Joining us on the Village Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Christopher, head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And safe to say, Paul, today's a slow news day, especially in the world of finance.
Well, that durable number this morning was important. We need to be able to show that there's some impulse that's positive in the economy right now that's independent of tariffs. So this is a good thing to see, and the markets for the second day in a row now have started negative and have come back positive.
Now, we also have the private payroll number for the month of March, ADP, the private payroll processor. Of course, their number and the government number that comes out on Friday morning may not necessarily line up just because of different methodologies, but the ADP report said 155 new jobs in the month of March, and that was above expectations. So another positive data point today.
Yeah, you're right about the underscoring that that caution there. The ADP report and the Bureau of Labor Statistics don't necessarily agree, and it's been difficult to try to use one to predict the other in the post-pandemic era with people thinking different things about job searches. But yeah, that 155,000 number, that's a positive number. And I'll point out something I've said before, I think on this show too, that the 15-year average for jobs being created in a month is right around 150 to 160,000 jobs. And we're sitting right on that number. And really what we want to think of the labor market doing is it's not crashing. It's just coming in for the landing after those really strong years of 22, 23, and 24.
Now let's discuss the big thing that's happening today after the markets close, and that is the tariff announcement from the White House detailing sweeping new levies on imported goods into the U.S. It's a Rose Garden event, and it's safe to say, once again, Donald Trump is very good at selling things and hyping things, and that certainly is the case this time. It's got a name. He's calling it Liberation Day. We have countdown clocks on business news channels until that tariff announcement. But how are the analysts parsing what this announcement could be and what it would mean for the American economy?
Well, right. The analysts are looking past the propaganda, the naming of the day to see what exactly comes out. And over the last week or so, it's been back and forth in the markets on whether it's just going to be some what we'll call, tariffs to make up for what other countries reciprocally are already charging us. For example, India, 100% tariff on our agricultural products. Will we come back with 100% to match theirs reciprocally? That would be one level that the markets, I think, would be happy to see, or at least not too disconcerted to see. But if you start layering on top of that new tariffs on all semiconductors or on all pharmaceuticals, or if you start laying tariffs, 20% universal tariffs on, let's say, all of our trading partners, then it becomes much harder for households and firms to adjust to those taxes. And there will be deeper economic consequences to come.
Paul Christopher, head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, putting together a plan to help land a job.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
In a crowded job market, bold candidates stand out by bringing actionable plans and not just a resume to the interview table. Joining us to explain is Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And And the idea of looking for a job at any time, regardless of the economy, can be rather intimidating. It seems like to help you succeed mentally, it's to break it down into various chunks. And the first thing you should probably do is just imagine where you are relative to your competition. And I say this because I was talking to a relative who is a recruiter, and she told me that when she's trying to talk to people for jobs, half of the people she contacts, they forget that they even applied. So there's that hurdle you get out of the way. And the second one is really acing the interview. And if you want to ace the interview, Michelle, you should probably have a plan above and beyond. Please give me the job because I'd like it.
Absolutely, Rob. You know, in comment to your relative, it's so true. It's so easy to apply for jobs today. You can jump online, search hundreds of jobs, submit your application with the click of one button, and really go at things blind and not really stand out from the crowd to the recruiters and the HR teams of the world that are really reviewing those applicants.
Now, when it comes to having a plan for a job interview, what is that plan, and what are some ways that you can leverage that intelligently in the job interview?
Absolutely. So one of the first things your plan should be is to stand out from the competitive market. You want to make sure that that employer sees you as a candidate that is different than all the rest that applied. And the first thing that you can do is start by researching that company fully. Never walk into an interview not knowing anything about what they do, what positions they have open, you know, what their specific products are, and how you can support that business's goals. I say take it one step further and actually look up the person you'll be meeting with. Go to their LinkedIn profile, look at their job history, how long have they been with the company, so that you can walk in and really set up a plan on how you can benefit them, but really ask intelligent questions about the job, the role, and the company.
And when it comes to having that plan and also having some material prepared going into that interview, I've heard about people who have they've really studied the business and have come up with three or four potential ways to grow business or become more efficient or solve certain problems. If you come in there with a very detail oriented approach, do you shoot to the top of the list?
Absolutely. You know, anytime that you can sit down, look at your own current experience and draw parallels from your work experience to how it would correlate to the current opening or that company's business focus, you immediately stand out from everyone else that's just coming in to answer the question, tell me a little bit about yourself. And so you want to make sure you take the time to make those correlations.
Now, when it comes to, there are so many hurdles in applying to a job. Obviously, the resume has to really, jump out at the person who is making the hiring decision. And then you have to ace the interview. And the question I always have is, where does the cover letter come in this particular process? Because it seems like a lot of people agonize over a cover letter and writing in just a couple of paragraphs how it's, their lifelong dream to work at this particular organization. Is a cover letter a determining factor? Let's say you ace the interview. Is the cover letter the thing that could potentially tip it in?
No. The cover letter, it really has become a thing of the past with so many applicant tracking systems. You know, that cover letter quickly gets scanned and oftentimes not read. I'll tell you the one thing that makes you really stand out from the rest, though, is the good old trusted thank you note after the interview, to appreciate that interviewer's time, and then there's your chance to solidify why you're the perfect person for the job. But that thank you letter to me means a lot.
And when you say thank you letter, is it like a physical letter that you stamp and mail, or could it also just be an email or a LinkedIn message?
You know what? Email, LinkedIn message, 100% fine. You're right. I rarely receive letters anymore, but I'll tell you, when I actually do get a thank you note, that even gives you one more notch in my book. So, just be appreciative and use that final chance to tell them why you're the perfect candidate for the job.
Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, Nintendo's back. Switch 2 drops on June 5th. We have the details coming up next.
The conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Nintendo announced today that will release its new video game console, the Nintendo Switch 2, on June 5th. Joining us with a preview is Carl Prouty, the technologist at Apt Electronics in Glenview. Carl, thank you for joining us today. The first question, Carl, and possibly the most important, is do I have to relearn how to play Mario Kart with the new Switch console?
No, it will. Thankfully, it doesn't seem like it's going to be quite that complicated. They added a couple new buttons to the remotes, but the overall type of gameplay is going to be very similar. You're just going to have more options now.
Now, we should point out that the Nintendo Switch, when it came out in 2017, was easily one of the biggest Nintendo products in recent history, and it also was a game changer, no pun intended, for the entire games industry.
Absolutely. It's exciting because you're getting this really powerful system that is completely portable. And we've had things like that in the past, but nothing that was quite as exceptional as what you got with this one. And it's such an easy console to use that it appeals to a much wider variety of people.
Now, how does the Switch 2 differ from the existing Nintendo Switch that many people have in their homes?
It differs quite a bit. So you're going to get a much bigger screen on this one. The screen size from the original Switch increased almost 2 inches. So it's a much bigger screen on this one. It's going to be a higher resolution screen. So you're going to get more detail. It's a faster screen. So everything's going to look smoother on it. It's going to be brighter. The Joy-Cons, which are the little joysticks that attach to the sides of it, those are going to be improved as well. They're bigger. The buttons are better. You can detach them magnetically now instead of having to slide them into place, which is going to be much easier. And you can use them like a mouse. It's a really cool addition to the video game console.
As for the games themselves, I think you and I both grew up in a time when if you had to put a Nintendo cartridge in, you had to blow on it to get the dust out. But in this case, the games are tiny, almost like the size of a USB drive, and in some cases, you just merely download them. So, what is the ratio to purchasing a physical game to actually downloading a game for the new for the Switch 2?
So they're really, it feels like they're really kind of pushing you to do the downloads. So they increased the storage capacity on the new one to 256 gigabytes, where the old one was 32. So you get a lot more storage space. So the idea is you really have fewer things to keep track of because you can download everything onto the Switch 2 itself. You can still buy physical cartridges. They're going to do this new thing where you buy a cartridge that basically has a key on it. So the game's not on the cartridge, but the key to download the game is going to be on it. But if you have an existing Switch, the nice part about that is the games are going to be backwards compatible. So if you wind up buying a Switch 2, you can still play those old games on the new console.
And then very quickly, how large is the Nintendo Switch ecosystem? You know, for example, if there's a game you like, but it's on one particular platform, would it work on Switch? Could you download it for a Nintendo Switch 2?
Some of the stuff, yes, there are some. Like when you have PlayStation 5, when you have the Xbox One Series X, you have these ultra-powerful systems, and you have a lot more real estate to fit all that stuff inside of. So some of the really, really graphically intensive games are not going to be compatible across the systems, but they do a good job of bringing a lot of the really popular stuff over. So you do get a really wide variety of games to play.
Carl Prouty, the technologist at Apt Electronics in Glenview, can't wait to try it out as soon as the kids are done playing Dance Dance Revolution.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Voters in Wisconsin have made their choice in an important judicial race. We're experiencing some heavy weather today, and that's the case across the Midwest. In Personal Finance Wednesday, a tax refund can present an opportunity to knock down some debt, build up an emergency fund, or invest. Technology and design creating a spirited debate in both Major League Baseball and and the NFL. Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 294 points. The NASDAQ is up 214. The S&P 500 is up 47. We have 44 degrees right now in Chicago with a thunderstorm. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. Voters in Wisconsin have chosen Susan Crawford to fill a vacant seat on the state Supreme Court, retaining its 4-3 liberal majority. She defeated Republican Brad Schimmel. More from CBS News reporter Bruce Marcus in Wisconsin.
Crawford won despite her opponent receiving strong endorsements from President Trump and Elon Musk, but she claimed if Schimmel was elected, he would merely be a rubber stamp for their agendas. Crawford's victory is regarded as a repudiation of the president, who won Wisconsin narrowly in 2024.
It was the most expensive judicial election in American history, with more than $100 million spent. Severe flooding is a major worry in America's midsection.
Weather forecasters are warning of epic amounts of rain across the Mid-South and Ohio Valley. Flood watches have been posted from Arkansas to Ohio. Rick Castle neighborhood in Dyersburg in northwest Tennessee often floods.
I lived and moved here in 2012, and I've been through four of them already. Yeah, so it's pretty common.
More than 30 million people are under flood alerts. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Thomas Martin, Senior Portfolio Manager with Globalt Investments in Atlanta, Georgia. Tom, thank you for joining us today. And the markets are moving up today, and investors aren't behaving like some sort of boom is going to be lowered later this afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me on your program. If you just tuned into the market today after having maybe gone to sleep last night, you would have missed that the markets were off quite sharply before the open. And it looked as though investors were very, very concerned about what might happen in the announcement. So maybe it's, sell the news in the beginning, and now reposition yourself for maybe something that's a little bit not as bad.
Now, this is repeating a pattern that has taken place all week where the futures markets are down and then the markets open lower but then recover as the day goes on. Any insight as to why that's been happening?
Well, I think it just speaks to the general uncertainty of the market and the difficulty that investors are having with being comfortable with their positioning, and especially what's been going on all year when up until February 19th, the leadership was very clear. It was the Mag 7, it was growth, it was technology, it was AI, et cetera. And then that all changed, and it went in favor of value and safety. The U.S. is going to go into a recession or slowdown, et cetera. And you had a very quick reaction from the market for the S&P for a sell-off into correction territory. And then, everybody knew it was oversold, so it bounced back. So we're here just really kind of chopping around, awaiting this announcement, not knowing that it's really going to resolve anything permanently, but that at least we'll get, a couple of more cards to try and figure out.
Even then, if you find out when we find out what the tariff announcement is going to be after the markets close this afternoon, the next step is finding out, reciprocal tariffs from the countries that get hit by our tariffs. And there has been some analyst modeling about what that means for the economy, and it would result in a slowdown if our tariffs are met in kind by our trading partners.
Well, it seems fairly straightforward that the price of food and the price of automobiles and things associated with both of those things are going to go up, and that will have an effect on the consumer. And I think you've seen that in the consumer uncertainty, just sort of pulling back in their discretionary areas, discretionary names and the restaurants, et cetera, have done poorly. And you've seen announcements, you know, with people kind of pulling back on travel with the airlines, et cetera. But there hasn't been a decline in income or the ability to spend. It's just questioning. So, and you're right. What happens if this is really about negotiations and about resetting trade? We have a way to go, because you're going to have reactions and reactions to the reactions, and a period of time where you're churning around before things settle out again.
Thomas Martin, Senior Portfolio Manager with Globalt Investments in Atlanta, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, maximizing your income tax refund.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. If you get a tax refund this year, skip the splurge with markets down. It's a prime time to invest, and your future self will thank you. Welcome in Ed Jurtzen, Certified Financial Planner and founder of the Engage Wealth Group based in Chicago. Ed, thank you for joining us today. And first off, if you do get a generous tax refund, maybe it's time to take a look at your withholding before we talk about what you can do with that refund.
It's a great place to start, Rob. If you're getting an excessive refund in the thousands of dollars, basically what you've done is you've given Uncle Sam a tax-free loan. You know, with interest rates on money markets at 3.5%, 4.5%, I mean, that can be pretty costly over time. But realize some people use this as a forced saving mechanism. So it may not be bad if that is your strategy, Rob.
Now, when I received a tax refund well over 20 years ago, I did not go to the bank. I went to the computer store and bought a brand new Gateway 2000 PC tower. And it was a great machine, but by 2008, it was obsolete. And I'm guessing if I put that money in an investment account or a savings account, it would still be growing today.
Yeah, for your listeners, think about this. If you get a refund and you've already paid down your revolving debt like credit cards and you have your rainy day fund, instead of going out and splurging like you did on a computer that's going to be obsolete in a couple of years, look to potentially invest this money. So if you have a taxable account that's open or not, just go to your favorite custodian, open this. Because as you said, if you can invest, let's say, $2,000 today, and that money can grow 8% per year over the next 20 years, right? Instead of having a computer that's not worth much of anything, that could be over $9,000 in future value, or 4.5 times what you initially invested in. So your future self may thank you for those wise decisions today.
And you might take a look at just the volatility in the markets today and over the course of this year and say, maybe it's a bad idea to invest, but oh no, Ed, this is a great time to invest, as a matter of fact.
You know, investors are not built, humans, I should say, are not built for investments today, right? It's that loss aversion. Losses feel twice as painful as gains. But what a great opportunity it is to take advantage of discounts. We love buying things on discounts. Also, think about this from the stock market. If the stock market's down 10 or 20%, the further we get down, the more positive it is in terms of potential future returns. So don't look at the negativity today in terms of not wanting to invest, because if this is long-term money, it's very difficult to try to argue against investing in stocks for the long run.
And you mentioned very briefly about using this money to invest if you've already paid down debt and that you pay your credit cards on time and things like that. But if you are carrying a balance and you use that tax refund to pay down debt, and therefore you're not paying nearly as much in interest on a month-to-month basis, how powerful is that tax refund?
Wow, it's very powerful, Rob, because we can't guarantee anybody a return in the market. But if you pay down these high credit card rate balances, right, at 20%, I can guarantee you, you're going to save 20% in interest expense over that time by paying it down. So yes, when you're looking at the kind of rates you have for debt, and if it's a high rate, please pay that down first and get yourself into a really good financial position. But also, Rob, if you're bringing up those credit card bills, also look at a spending plan and making sure you're living within your means and not overstretching, so you're not repeating this vicious cycle.
Ed Jertsen, certified financial planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Find him online at engagewealthgroup.com. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, two hot topics in sports, the torpedo bat and the chain gang.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
One of the frequent discussions involving the NFL is the antiquated chain gang to measure first downs, while a new bat is generating buzz in baseball. We welcome in Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And is it when it comes to the torpedo bats, just because baseball season is here, the first week is in the books, and would we be talking about the torpedo bats if the Milwaukee Brewers had better pitching in New York during that opening series?
We actually would be talking about it. I mean, come on. Just yesterday, or day before yesterday, the Cubs scored 18 runs. The Mets scored 10. The Royals 11. The White Sox are hitting the ball. The Reds scored 14. You look at this and you say, there's something going on here, because early in the season, it's always been that the pitchers were ahead of the batters and the games were low scoring. The cold weather, the pitchers were ahead of the batters, and now we're seeing some really significant runs being scored. And I have to tell you, this is actually really good for baseball. It is good to have scoring. You know the old line, chicks dig the long ball, fans dig the long ball. And we've had we've gone through a period where we haven't had a lot of that. We have walks, strikeouts, or home runs, and not enough home runs. This is actually, as much as the purists are going to say, oh, this is bad, the pitchers have had so many advantages the last few years with rule changes and equipment changes, and now the hitters are getting some, and the bats are legal. So let the players do it. Let's get some long balls going. We're going to get more fans in the stands and more fans watching the games.
And on top of that, I mean, there have been several years in which the balls were wound a little more tightly, and that was always a belief, you know, that the balls are juiced, and you can say, and you can quantify that. You can say there were some years where home runs spiked considerably just because of the makeup of the baseball, and then they changed the method of manufacturing and home runs went down. So this seems like an extension of juicing the baseball.
Well, yeah, except it's legal. Juicing the baseball, it wasn't really intended to create that kind of advantage. Then add something else to the mix. You know, it's okay to have a bat that's a slightly different shape. We've always had that. As long as it meets the tests, we've had bats with really thin handles. Some players can swing it, some can't. What we didn't like was when the players got juiced. Forget about juicing the baseball. We didn't like the players getting juiced. So this is a little bit of technology. It's having a little more dense wood at where the players are hitting the ball, and some players are going to be able to take advantage of it. Like I said, the Cubs got 18 runs the other day. That's pretty good, especially in April. When the ball typically doesn't leave the ballpark that way. So this is going to make the games more fun as well, especially after years of the pitchers having so much of an advantage.
And then very quickly, Mark, the chain gang appears to be going away in the NFL. the referees pulling that those two orange pylons with a 10-yard chain in the middle, we will be determining first downs now with high tech.
Yeah, it's going to make the process quicker. It'll make it more definitive. You know, it's funny. Everybody always focused on and the camera on where the referee was pulling the chain where the football was, and nobody focused on where the link was that the guy in the back was holding it and holding it down on the yard line marker, which actually was just as important as to where the tip of the football was. This will take away all of that uncertainty. It'll make it quicker. Now, I for one may miss that rare play where the referee took the card out of his pocket to see if there was any gap between the first down marker and the football. You remember that happened once about a decade ago. That was kind of fun to see. But It's going to be faster. It's going to be more certain, and it takes away the human element associated with that part of refereeing. Good on the NFL for doing it. They tested it. It'll work well moving forward. It's going to be great.
Mark Annis, president, co-founder of Sports Corp. Limited in Chicago.